Hello, and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and with me today is my very special guest, Eliza Mata Dalian, author of In Search of the Miraculous, Healing into Consciousness. This book is the recipient of 6 book awards and the Living Now Best Book of the Year. Ms. Dalian, after just completing reading your very honest and soul-searching journey, I wish to suggest to our listeners who would like to read a detailed description of the universal laws of energy and also a comprehensive and technical study of the energetic chakra system that they read your book. Reading this book will offer ways to explore awakening to their own inner strengths and help establish a guide to finding a healthier, more positive way to live, love, and create better interactions with others. Hello, Ms. Dalian.
Hello, Cheryl. Very good to be with you today.
And with you also. Mata, as listeners of my show Healing From Within know, it has been my main goal to present visionaries and leaders in the field of medicine, spirituality, and the arts and scientists who represent the search for personal enlightenment, who we are, and what the purpose of life in an ever-changing world and universe, and at the same time, help to uncover and reveal a clearer understanding of the dual nature of life, consisting of our inner soul journey and also our mind or ego perception of physical life. For our audience, Mata Dalian is an award-winning author, also a medical intuitive and healer. And today, Mata and I will discuss in this episode your Dalian method, described as a healing method, which is a light-speed method for transforming physical and psychological pain and suffering into health and consciousness. Mata, before we discuss the actual process of your healing system, would you tell our listeners what the word miraculous, used in the title of your book, In Search of the Miraculous, means to you?
Well, the miraculous, really, we are the miraculous. And the other part of the miraculous is that we are searching for ourselves without knowing that the search ends the moment we find our being, which is always in the here and now. So, in a sense, it's both, you know, the search for that enlightenment, what we call enlightenment, and union with God, with existence, and at the same time, it's a big joke because we are the miraculous who are already in that union. We're like the fish who is thrown out of the ocean, and in a way, the Sufi people say when, you know, as a parable, they describe the process when the fish is thrown out of the ocean, only then it realizes that it's been always living in the ocean.
Yes, you know, I think of it this way. We are each and every one of us part of the divine energy of the universe, and that is miraculous once you realize that you hold a bit of that quality of life and love and connection to everybody. And I think we're talking about the same thing here. We all have just what we need to achieve and have a wonderful life. It's sometimes when our mind deceives us and we have an illusion of separation from the connectedness of the whole of the universe and energy, that we begin to doubt our purpose in life and start to be involved in pain and suffering. Mata, in your book, you mentioned that in spite of your training and education in architecture and education, you were drawn in a different direction, and that was at a very young age. Can you tell us several profound experiences that led to your awakening or your new perception of life and your life in particular?
Well, what led to awakening, in a way, it's a lengthy process of many lifetimes searching for basically searching to find who I am.
Yes.
And this is everybody's search. And what makes the search difficult is obviously the ego mind and all the beliefs that it carries. And what the stumbling blocks along the way are all the emotions and thoughts, beliefs, and conditionings that we're identified with. And this is what keeps us in pain and misery and suffering. So once the experience of enlightenment is achieved, those things suddenly vanish, or the identification with the ego mind vanishes, and therefore the internal stress or the internal anxiety and fear cease to exist. So my experience was that since I was 24, well, I would say even going back to since I was 5 years old when I witnessed my grandfather's death, is when I started asking the question, who am I and what am I doing here? Where am I going to go when I die? And the question came very naturally because I realized that my grandfather's dead. He's gone, at least from this plane.
Yes.
And he's not going to be, you know, continuing with the life he's had as in his body. And I also realized that every one of us is going to have the same fate, that we're temporarily here, and sooner or later we're going to have to say goodbye. And the most important question then would be to find that part within that is eternal, that never dies. And that's the search. And so after that, in a way, my search rekindled when I, at the age of 24, after going through the normal education system, I came across the teachings of George Gurdjieff and then later Osho. And, of course, what brought me there, some search about the life after death, and I was reading books about that, and Edgar Cayce, and gradually, you know, Gurdjieff's books or Uspensky's book In Search of the Miraculous came to my attention. Just a friend lent me the book, and that opened a complete new door and a deeper understanding to what the search is about. And of course, reading Osho was a humongous transformation in terms of the perception that I had about reality. And
as a three-dimensional person, you became aware that there was a fourth dimension.
Well, there's even more than fourth dimension. There's many dimensions,
yes.
But it's just the matter of recognizing that what is the most important in life. Because we tend to forget that. We tend to bring our focus to things that are very temporary, mundane, though they're important. But when we put all our attention to them, this is where we dissipate our energy, which is very important to use for our own transformation. And, you know, everybody sooner or later comes to ask those questions. And in my case, it happened sooner than later. And, of course, I left my education. I left the training that I had in education, so I did not pursue the career in what I was trained in as a teacher and my training in architecture, and I focused on my inner search through meditation and listening to Osho's talks, and that opened many possibilities, and not only that, not only intellectual possibilities, but also experiential experiences of realizing that I'm not my body, I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my emotions. And that happens.
No, we are the divine souls and part of the universe and continuous life and eternal. Yes.
Well, that's true. And, you know, there is a difference, though. In the beginning, intellectually, we know that. But then what's very important is to experientially experience it.
You know, Mada, I think there are many people who don't intellectually know that, and that's why they suffer more. and they are so trapped within the ego and the identification process. But let me just say, we have something very unique in common. I was awakened by a visit from my grandfather, as you were awakened to a sense of wanting to know more about yourself and life and death by your grandfather. It was about 18 years ago, and I had what I thought to be a dream, and I felt my grandfather standing by my side. I was sick with the flu at the time, and he said to me, "You have to write something for your father." And I didn't know what it meant, and the next morning my father died, and I wrote his eulogy, and I ultimately wrote my book, Life is No Coincidence, The Life and Afterlife Connection, as a result of starting a journey to understand more about energy and the communication between different dimensions. So we were both led and guided by loving grandfathers and wanting to know more about how, in a way, to be connected to everything that exists. And that was probably not with our mind, but with our heart and our soul essence awakening. Would you agree?
Well, I would, not entirely, because it's still a realm of the mind. It's still the mind thinking that I was awakened. It's the true awakening happens when the mind ceases to exist. In other words, the true awakening happens when we realize that I am the universe. I am not separate. That actually I am God, and I don't need to seek and search anywhere. All the answers are inside me. And this is
the experience. Well, I'm saying the same thing. I'm saying exactly the same thing, that the essence is within us, and the awakening is from within, and nothing external can really make this possible. Unless you come into this connection with the divine and realize you are the divine and part of everything that ever was or will be. So it's exactly the same concept that we have.
Yeah, it's true. But what I would describe my experience with my grandfather, I wouldn't describe it as awakening. The way I would describe it, maybe I would describe it as an aha experience that suddenly... In a way, it's like a small awakening.
It was a piece of the puzzle
that
led you on to the next step. The same for me.
Exactly.
The same for me. Now, Mada, I have also studied the philosophies of Gordachev. I have trouble saying his name.
Gordachev, yes.
And Ouspensky and other mystics and seekers from the ancient Roman and Greek mystery schools, known as fourth dimensional schools, and have been a member of the Academy of European Art and Culture for years, which is one group studying concepts offered by the ancient writers. They believe they study 66 writers who sought a greater understanding of both our physical and our energetic lives in order to go beyond the mind and the intellect and ego to have that awakening and be part, know I am, and everything I am is everything that everyone else is. So can you give us a brief description of the philosophy of some of the people or these type of mystery schools, as you've done a great deal of studying about these concepts?
Well, my studying has been more an internal study. In other words, it's been more an internal exploration after the first step, after passing the first step of actually intellectually reading about the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And the intellectual reading of the concepts opens a curiosity and opens a door of possibilities, and by nature, we're very curious as human being. And we always like to learn and to expand and to know more. So that's one of our gifts and one of our blessings, and that's what makes us different from the animal realm, because animals are content in their nature. They don't search, they don't seek, they don't ask questions. And for me, the philosophy is basically know thyself.
Yes.
And that's the whole journey. And in order for anybody to know themselves or their true being, the truth of their original face, what the Zen people call finding your original face before you were born, that only comes through meditation, introspection, and peeling away those layers that prevent us from actually seeing that we are the truth.
Yeah, those layers being fear and misconceptions that were given to us often by teachers and parents who meant well, but who were themselves involved in only the physical life and were not or could not go into this internal search as many of us are doing now. Now, Mata, can you tell us what you think the difference between a three-dimensional physical life and life beyond this plane would be?
Well, the difference obviously is anything material, anything that the vibration of the energy is more solid. So whatever is in the 3D dimension is what is tangible and we can touch. And whatever is intangible, obviously it moves to a different dimension. And in my book, I was describing the seven different bodies which are connected with the seven chakras.
Yes.
And this is where we move the vibrations, they move higher as we get more conscious. So the transformation, the body is like a mechanism, like a prism, and every center, the chakra in the body is like a transformation chamber that allows for the unconsciousness to be transformed into consciousness. And this is how we move and evolve through our body and through our chakra system, and that's why it's so important.
And through our life, also through the life issues, because each chakra corresponds to certain physical life issues. And as we deal with them and learn and accept and allow and surrender to whatever we're being taught, we can then go on to the next chakra for new lessons. And that is part of the transformation process. Is that correct?
Well, that's what I described in the book, yes. So then the ego also is very much connected within each chakra. We need to learn how to transform, how to heal the wounded ego in each chakra and then transform it into consciousness because, like you said, through the life lessons allow us to do that. And, of course, understanding the process will make it a lot simpler so that we have this book is like a map that gives people an opportunity to understand that, okay, well, this is what's happening now, and then there's another step, and then another step, and these are the areas where you need to transform the ego and heal the wounded ego into a inner strength so that you have that strength to face the fears, to face the unconscious, which always seems to be so scary, and also to face the unknown ultimately, because that's the greatest fear is the fear of the unknown and the fear of death.
Yes, and nothing can be changed or transformed until you actually realize what you're dealing with, accept it, and go beyond it. So it is a form of seeing it for what it is. You know, people say, oh, I can change this. But actually, you cannot change anything unless you first see it, realize it, and want to make that jump or that change or leap of faith. Mata, in your book you have written, love and happiness and peace can't be found outside but within. And this is the premise of this radio show, Healing From Within. Can you tell us more about this simple but profound realization?
Well, it sounds simple, but it's not so simple in real life. And I think this is where everybody has a difficulty. And the difficulty is that when a child is born, the child is obviously in need of attention and love and support. And that, because most of us do not receive the full need and attention and support the way our being needs to be nourished, there is always something unfulfilled within. So then we grow up thinking that it will be fulfilled from outside. And this is the misconception that keeps many people still in the immature childish state. And to be able to come to the realization that I have everything already within me, we need to start peeling away those beliefs that are in the body that say I need my existence depends on other people. And,
yes, I agree.
If I'm rejected and I'm not accepted, then my existence is at stake. Because this is what the child knows. The child's intelligence knows that I am dependent on my parents. I'm independent on other people. So once we can see that we have the power within us to do whatever we want and to give love that we're looking from outside to give to ourselves, then we mature. And in that maturity, then this is where we start waking up to the understanding that we are the end. So in other words, we are what we're searching for.
Yes, Mada. And you know, I've seen children who have exhibited exactly what you're talking about, and I've seen grown-ups who haven't been able to exhibit that. So maturity of the soul and a knowingness that everything is possible and a trust in and love for ourselves is possible at a very young age. And if fostered by parents, and if a child is allowed to develop their unique gifts and love of life and love of soul or self, the possibilities are endless. But you understand what I'm saying here, that there are many grown-ups who feel that they know so much more and can be the leader for children and others, and yet they may be functioning at a level not even as developed as a younger person. So it has nothing to do with age. It has to do with the connections that people can make to who they are, what they're here on this planet or earth to do, and to find as much joy and self-fulfillment as they can, knowing the truth within themselves and honoring that truth and not allowing others to take that away from them. Would you agree?
Well, I would say 99% of people are in the boat that you just described. And the reason is that because our education system is flawed.
Yes.
And the reason is that in our education system, we teach our children how to succeed in the material world and how to compete, but we do not teach them how to find their uniqueness, their individuality, how to find the answers within themselves. And then the children grow up depending on the authority figure that would approve or disapprove of them. And this is, you know, and a child growing up like this, what are they going to be able to give to their children? Basically same thing what they were given and they were taught. So unless our education system changes and we start bringing a dimension of, you know, meditation and introspection and a dimension of actually looking at the temporariness of life and accepting death as part of life, unless we bring that education, I don't think we can really change the collective consciousness on this planet.
Well, I think we are both working towards that end, and every person I've had on this radio show is working towards that end to help guide people to find themselves. And when they find this love within themselves, they will be better parents and better at whatever it is that they choose to explore in this world. So I believe
that's right. And many parents are recognizing that, and
yes,
they're doing their own work, and they're involving their children And they're actually starting to understand that they need to respect their children and starting to understand that their children have a lot of wisdom. So unfortunately, it's a handful of parents who are really conscious of this, and hopefully with more of the education, as you said, that is being done through interviews like what you're doing, we can bring more of that excitement to parents or to adults to actually do their own inner work so that they can actually, because I know that they want to give the best to their children. It's just
absolutely.
They don't know.
They just
they don't know how. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, I say to people all the time, be the example and work on yourself, and then your children will follow, because you can't you can't explain things to people. You can't tell them what to do. You have to be what you want them to be. And that means working, all of us, working on ourselves to continue to grow and evolve and expand. Mada, can you tell us the procedure used by you in a session with a client using the Dalian method? How you begin a session and how you work through helping people to realize more about themselves and what it is that may be causing inhibitions or a lack of their total comfort in their body and freedom?
The Dalian method is it's a kind of a method that comes at this time in our development, because I feel the consciousness is ready to work with such an evolutionary method, because it's both simple and very powerful. And what it does, even though I started, I started developing it as I was working one-on-one with people and trying to explore, this is exactly what I'm actually writing in my second book now, which is actually about this method, and I've developed it to a point where people can actually start using it for themselves as a self-help method. So in the process of development, what I discovered is that people's bodies and energies are full of contradictory thought forms. And those thought forms are there because of all their life experiences from this life and previous lifetimes. And all those thought forms have been created based on the experience that we have. For example, every time we have an experience, especially when it's a traumatic experience, there is a belief that we form about the experience. And that belief is imprinted in the body. It's imprinted in the cellular memory. And what this method does, it goes into, through the layers of the unconscious, to get to the root cause of where the initial experience and the initial belief was formed. And once it identifies that, then it starts releasing all those beliefs out of the body, so that once the energy is cleared, it's almost like clouds that are covering the sun, and mm-hmm. the sun is within each person. The sun, the consciousness, is within each person. We're born with it, but the cloud, the belief, the ego mind covers them all up. So with this method, it releases those layers that are like clouds from the energy. And once those layers are released, then there is a shift in consciousness that happens, where a person suddenly realizes that this was actually an illusion that I was believing in. And with that, the actual belief gets erased from the body's cellular memory. And the way the method works, it works with the whole body, and basically from head to toe, and it works with the four hemispheres of the brain, mm-hmm. and with the entire chakra system, and releasing, like I said, all those repressed thought forms, emotions, and beliefs through the entire body. So the transformation
Mata,
then...
Do you believe this process is similar to other energy healing work, body work,
no,
such as Reiki,
no,
Reconnect, Cranial Sacral, Polarity Healing, or any
none,
of the other
none,
energy
healing? None,
none, none. Not like that.
No,
so
it's absolutely...
Yeah, what do you do with a client when you work with them? Do they lie on a table? Do they sit in a chair? Do you...
Well, when I'm working with a person directly...
Yes.
Normally, people who come to work with me are people who've done all sorts of therapies before, and they still feel there's a stuckness that they can't get through.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that people also come with illnesses or pain, chronic pain, and other ailments. So what I do first, I look into their energy to determine, you know, what are the layers in the unconsciousness.
How do you see this? Do you see it as a hologram, or do you see it as darkness in the chakra system?
I do see the light and the dark areas in the body and energy, but the dark area simply indicates this is the unconscious area.
Yeah.
Whatever's in the light, it's already in the light, it's conscious, and I don't need to worry about that. So what I do then, I would look into the layers of that darkness. In other words, it's almost like I bring in a torch and I walk into the dark room, and then I start seeing the furniture around,
mm-hmm,
right?
And
so,
you see what's out of place.
But then there's so many layers, you see?
Mm.
It's not just one layer that the unconscious is made of. And not only that, all these layers, they're interconnected, and then there is, and we need to look, I look through each layer till I get to the root cause, to where I see, okay, this particular problem that the person is bringing me has originated in this place. Sometimes it's, you know, an experience in the childhood, many
mm-hmm
times we have, right? And sometimes it's experience from previous lifetime. Sometimes it's a pattern that runs through many lives. And that's why it becomes even harder to detect for people to, what is this? I've tried everything and I'm still feeling stuck. Because the pattern has been repeated for 3-4 lifetimes. And it's harder to see and break through. So once I see that, then I communicate that with the person, and then I actually put them on the table and I work with their body directly. But it doesn't have to be that way always, because I also do this over the phone. So I don't always work with people.
So you're sensing blockages in their thought processes or in their physical body that needs to release toxins.
It's not really sensing, Cheryl. It's more like I read what's in the unconscious. It's like when you read a book.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm able to read those beliefs and thought forms in their energy.
Well, you see, I do something similar as a medium and Reiki practitioner. When I meditate and receive a great deal of information for the client, many times I don't know everything involved, but when I mention it to them, they are able to discuss and see things in a different way so that they can go to a new perception, and they can release pain, they can release fear, they can release sorrow, they can release experiences or people in their lives that no longer work for them. But I do the reading, which is connecting to higher consciousness, and then the energy healing work, which puts their body in a deep state of relaxation. So is this similar to some of the work that you're doing?
Not exactly. When I'm working with the person's body, I'm working with the thought forms in their energy directly. I don't need to do any, I don't sort of try to feel it intuitively or try to get in tune to what's happening for them, I read it. So I read the energy. I see what's in the energy. It's sort of like there's no guesswork involved. So and then with my method, I've discovered how to work with those thought forms and release them through the entire body.
And for the person to do the work also. The person
has done the whole work.
Right. You're just illuminating certain concepts that might be blocking them so that they can then release it themselves.
And afterwards, I use a system of breathing.
Yes.
A system of breathing and expression and exhalation as I work through the entire body.
Yeah.
And I work through contradictory thought forms. So in a way, I work directly with thought forms that are imprinted in the energy. And sometimes, also what's very important is to see where the person is, where it's a belief in the body and where it's awareness. Because I'm also able to detect or to read awareness. In other words, I know when consciousness happens and, I know when the shift happens, and I know how to actually ground that shift so that the person can carry on without really needing a long time to remember what happened. So it's a process of, because grounding is very important. Grounding of consciousness is very important. The shifts can happen, but if we don't know how to ground, then it's almost like you're sleeping, you suddenly wake up from the sleep and you remember, oh yeah, I had this dream, and then you go back to sleep, and then when you wake up in the morning, you don't remember what it is if you don't ground that consciousness.
I think many people are having flashes or moments of higher consciousness and being aware that they are more than their body. But then the ego, it seems to be a battle bringing them back and forth to living a physical life and then going into this, their spiritual essence. And even for the most evolved people, having a physical life means that we do want to enjoy some of the growth and processes that we're entitled to have here. So I don't think we can be in that higher consciousness all the time. Our hope is that as we become more enlightened, we stay in these moments of bliss and happiness and joy and connection to ourself more and more and more, but we will never really, while we're in a physical body, completely conquer the ego. We may learn not to fear death. We may learn to know who we are, but in still remaining on the physical plane, there will still be a shift back and forth into the life processes and then the soul or spiritual processes. But I want to go on to something else. In your book, I read that you were taking your daughter years ago to a place called Beaver Lake for an ice skating experience, and something very interesting happened to you there. Can you tell us what happened that day? Do you remember?
I do remember it. Experiences like that are impossible to forget.
Mhm. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know how to skate, and so I thought, okay, I'll learn skating, and I obviously didn't know how to step into the skating rink. And the moment I put my foot down on the rink, I fell. On my coccyx, and it was such a strong fall that the pain was excruciating, and I felt the energy move through my spine, went up into my head, and I lost consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And because simply the pain was so excruciating, I couldn't have stayed in my body. And I remember floating through the tunnel and very peaceful and very aware that I am, and even though I don't feel a body, I'm in a very peaceful place. And I was enjoying actually being in that tunnel, and then I suddenly woke up because somebody was slapping my face.
So you had an out-of-body or almost near-death experience.
It was a near-death experience. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to the light all the way, but...
But you sensed that dimension. You sensed
it was that dimension, and yeah. Also because my daughter was very young at the time, I remember even in that state, I had the awareness that I can't really go all the way. Mm-hmm. So I knew
good.
That I...
You had to write your book and do your work, so you had to stay. But, Mada, many people are quite concerned with the Mayan prophecies about the year 2012, which is only 4 months away. And I want to tell you a little story because I want your reaction to this. Mm-hmm. Months ago, I was at a meditation group with international medium Robert Brown, and he asked us to ask a question while we were going to be in a deep meditation. And I was in a group of 12 worldwide gifted visionaries from many different places. And I, as a sensitive, can feel, I did feel the combined strength of each of us escalate as we all were connected in oneness to each other and to higher energy around us. So my question during the meditation was, what will happen in 2012? And now I'm going to tell you what I felt. Because I need your input on this. I felt myself as one single atom or drop, and I was floating in an endless space of darkness or emptiness. And I knew it was me, free of the physical body, and though I have had out-of-body experiences before, at this particular moment, in response to the question I asked, I was frightened, and I willed myself back beyond the place of nothingness. Now, in your book, you suggest that we think of the ego as a balloon that's held within a rubbish shell, and as the balloon expands and grows, the rubbish shell becomes thinner and thinner, and the air inside is consciousness. And as the balloon grows even larger, eventually it will explode, and the air or bubble or drop of soul life will return into the atmosphere where it originally came from. And then you go on further to say, when the last thought and the ego's fear of completely dissolving into the vast unknown is surrendered, the mind will burst like a balloon and the now, self-realized individual's consciousness will merge with the universal consciousness. So my question, Mada, is, do you think the impression I had while in meditation relates to your concept that I just described? And does this imply death of the individual or just discarding limiting beliefs?
But that your experience is actually precisely what the process is like. And many people, as a matter of fact, come to experience what you just described in different forms. And what happens is the fear comes in and the mind comes in and it stops the experience from completing itself. And as you said, you felt that nothingness, but then you said the fear came in and you came back.
Well, I didn't fear only for myself. I felt that since I had asked what's coming in 2012, I personally believe we are going to reach a higher level of consciousness, and I think that will come about by some major happening, which I'm not quite sure, and many people have different views on this. But I believe when the ego is shattered, people will be free of the limitations of their mind and completely aware of the possibilities of their internal soul energy. And that's what I would like to think. And
well,
let me
actually, you raised a very important point here. And I'd like to sort of step back a minute with that. What's really important, and, you know, including yourself, to keep in mind that when this experience happens again, this is a very, very, very important and crucial moment. And this is what we're preparing, or many people are preparing, and they need to remember this. That's what the Buddha called the right remembrance. You need to remember in that moment to witness clear and to witness the mind and to witness whatever is happening, because only through the witness you can pass through the door of the fear of the unknown and be able to surrender. So that's a very precious experience what you had. And if it happens again, just remember to witness, because in that moment, and if you can keep that for 60 seconds, just witnessing the fear and going through it, this is how that massive, you know, transformation in consciousness globally can happen for many people, if they, in that moment, keep that awareness.
Well, I believe I had that experience, the way it happened, so we could just talk about it today, so many people will be able, when the time is right, be able to move to the next level of thinking and behaving and acting. And personally, Mata, I don't believe it's in the place or the people we live with that encourage or discourage the way we find ways to unfold and develop into higher consciousness. I believe we are all given whispers from loved ones in spirit to awaken and to stand in our own personal truths. But only some of us, no matter what the challenges, will find love, peace, and goodwill within ourselves and become the examples of what future human beings will exemplify. So you are one such individual, and I believe we will eventually all be the light and the divine essence of our soul nature, and we will be free of the restrictions and the fears of a physical life. I want to thank you very much, Mata Dalian, and it has been my pleasure to speak with you and share your journey and search for the truth of your own being, which is indeed what we all hope for, to know ourselves better. For more information on Eliza Mata Dalian and her book In Search of the Miraculous, go to her website, www.healingintoconsciousness.com. In summarizing the episode, Searching for Inner Healing and Divine Presence, Mata Dalian and I have offered a way to see how the search for love, happiness, and peace can't be found outside in the environment or the minds of others, but must be a search to find out who we are from the inside of our own heart or soul. A quote from In Search of the Miraculous says, and I thought this was very beautiful, like the phoenix that is reborn out of its own ashes, we are healed into consciousness through the fire of our destroyed ego mind. Healing into consciousness includes both the search and the sudden moment of awakening to the truth that I am what I have been searching for. There are no shortcuts to spiritual enlightenment, self-realization, liberation, or union with the divine energy of the universe. For as evolving souls, we are continuously offered learning experiences and situations which will challenge our human or ego limited understanding of the complex nature of our unlimited soul potential. We have also discussed today that by accepting thoughts and emotions that surface and by witnessing all the events that happen around us, we can learn to surrender and accept everyone and everything happening. And thereby, we learn to let go and not get too attached to any one thought or emotion. Life is then going to offer us new ways to learn and to find unconditional love and compassion. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing from Within and author of Life is No Coincidence, and am now near to completing my new book, Whispers from Spirit, Shift into Being After 2012. For more information on energy healing and to hear masters and leaders in the field of spirituality, science, medicine, and world events, go to my website, www.cheryl.com.